Hey y'all, welcome to episode 3 of No Off Season. I know it has been a hot minute. This episode is coming out about a month later than I wanted it to, but it has been a super hectic month. As some of you know, I've been in the process of moving, so I have officially moved. I am in said new apartment, and I have an air mattress. And that is it. So, pardon the very dull, plain background, but it will be improved soon. But today we are talking with online fitness coach Matthew Wade. Full disclosure, he is my personal trainer. But that being said, I honestly hated the idea of having a virtual fitness trainer that you don't really get to see and you don't get to train with and they don't get to see how you train. And there were a bunch of things and notions that I had about online fitness coaches, which I get into with Coach Matt, but his philosophy and his approach to online fitness is really the opposite of what I had in my head. And I've been working with him for about 6 months now. I mean, I've seen progress within myself, but I've also seen the way he runs his coaching business. And knowing his style, I knew he would be a perfect guest to have on this show. We both went to Syracuse University, and he had the courage to completely pivot from his major and really change his entire career. And that's what this podcast is about, to always better yourself and to find that grind within yourself and within the people around you to make yourself and others better. This episode will be a little bit longer because his interview, this is a good thing, his interview was very difficult to edit because there were so many insightful things that he said that I didn't want to condense it too much. So please listen to the whole episode. If you're an athlete, a coach, fitness enthusiast, entrepreneur, like there are so many different hats that he wears that you can take away from this episode and that you can benefit from what he has to say. So here is Matthew Wade.
Thank you so much for doing this and for joining me. I'm super excited because, of course, I know you as Coach Matt, but I feel like other people know you as, you know, Matthew Wade, online fitness personality. Mm-hmm. So can you take me back to what started you pursuing an online fitness platform?
Yes. So I will start with, so I went to Syracuse University. Okay. Yep. And I went for your traditional finance entrepreneurship degree, as that's what, you know, my parents pushed me to. I come from a pretty white collar household, and you know, my sister went that route, and so kind of figured that was, you know, the route to go. And I would say sometime throughout my sophomore year, I kind of realized that, you know, when the internship kind of vibe and gist was starting to get a little bit more serious and you had to start applying, I really just kind of wasn't super about, you know, doing that whole 9-to-5. I really didn't like finance. I was always, you know, into numbers and mathematics, but I really started to kind of gain that passion for fitness. And, you know, I was in a fraternity, even though it may not seem like it anymore, I've kind of left that in the past.
Which fraternity were you in?
I was in Sigma Phi Epsilon. So I took a bunch of leadership roles in that. And just, you know, slowly but surely throughout college, I realized that the passion for fitness and helping people, and realizing I really feel like my purpose for being on this earth is to actually help individuals, rather than, you know, do something, you know, stereotypical in finance. So I, you know, ended up talking to my parents, trying to persuade them to let me, you know, switch my majors. And, you know, Syracuse is a private school. It's a lot of money. So they pretty much said absolutely not, unless I wanted to, you know, go into a lot of student debt, and I wasn't willing to do that. I kind of think that was a blessing though, because it kind of made me more of a business oriented, entrepreneur in the first place. And then I learned and self-taught and had mentorships to then, you know, accelerate my knowledge in terms of fitness, as opposed to what you see a lot in the fitness industry is people that go to school for exercise science and nutrition. They're a really kick-ass coach, but they have no idea how to actually run and operate a business. And that is arguably more important when it comes to a career, okay? So I would say, long story short, graduated college, finance degree, and over COVID, my start date at Merrill Lynch kept getting like pushed back. And I took it upon myself during COVID to just do some in-person personal training and start helping some of my, you know, fraternity brothers who are a little younger than me that kind of looked up to me, just online with like custom meal plans and nutrition plans. And I'll be straight up with you. I was not qualified to do this. Like, it was more or less like I was helping a friend out. And as long as you don't, in my opinion, as long as you don't over market that, you know, you're super qualified in the beginning when you know you're not, and you help people, that you know personally, and these people choose to work with that person because they motivate them, they inspire them, then there's nothing wrong with it. There is a lot of people that, you know, they do one weight loss phase and this kind of bothers me, or they do one lean growing phase and then they think they're, you know, qualified to then coach it and blast it out to the masses. Or you have these influencers that build a tremendous following off no knowledge at all, just their physique, and, you know, who knows what they're doing to achieve that physique. And then once they gain the following, they then automatically say, hey, I'm opening up my online coaching, and they're not necessarily qualified to work as an online coach and give, you know, plans when it comes to nutrition. That's why I have a registered dietitian that I outsource and work with, because, you know, you do have to, you know, from liability standpoint, have those metrics in place. So basically during COVID, like, I kind of just slowly started doing a little in-person training, like in my backyard at, like, you know, fields, like, you know, high school baseball fields and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I kind of realized that, you know, I was better suited, you know, in the future, you know, trading your time for your, you know, not trading time for money. I wanted to do everything online. I could really help people a little bit more in-depthly, working around their other 23 hours of their day other than just their training, better online, which arguably matter more than just your hour of training per day. And because I was also working in 9-to-5, so for 2.5 years, I did both. I did the 9-to-5 and I did my online coaching pretty much like on the weekends. You know, it got to the point where I was working like 100 hours a week, where I would basically work, you know, in the morning, I'd get up at 6 a.m., like do check-ins and stuff, then work 9-to-5, go train, and then come back and work until midnight on, you know, my business. So
yeah.
It was definitely, you know, living in Manhattan, it was definitely something that, you know, was like a hustle culture. And I feel like if you can make it in that city, you can pretty much make it wherever. But eventually, kind of writing on the wall came, and I realized that this is my passion, and if I was going to do it full time, there's no better way to do it. I did it. I started full time with it last November. So it's been amazing since I ever started that. Like, the quality of life, the quality of coaching is astronomically just improved, as you've experienced kind of firsthand. And it's been just a hell of a journey, like, to not to give you like a super long answer to that, but
no, hey, the more in depth the better.
Yeah.
Was there like one person or maybe a couple of people who, when you were doing that 9-to-5 and your online coaching, helped you or encouraged you to be like, yo, you need to be doing this full time? Or was that something you were like, I need to be doing this full time?
Absolutely. I would say, always had the support from my mom. I think my dad had to warm up to the idea because he worked, in corporate America for 20 years. And he was like very, your stereotypical parent, like, you know, you got to think about benefits, you got to think about, you know, insurance. And I really valued that opinion as well. It was someone that kind of pushed me to prove that I could do what I wanted to do. And not have to live your traditional 9-to-5, as you know, that generation didn't have the opportunities like working from home, didn't have social media, you know, all that good stuff. Now it's, you know, really practical and feasible that you can create your own revenue streams, different revenue streams from social media, from literally your bedroom. So I kind of use that, like my dad, not saying he was like a hater, but he was definitely someone in my life, like, you know, this is more or less viewed it as like a side gig for a long time. And I had to prove to him, like, you know, with the financials and, you know, just being a go-getter and kind of proving him. And I still have to prove it to him each, you know, year that we're growing and we're still staying ahead of the curve as I get closer to my mid, you know, 30s. And I'm a very independent person as well. So I kind of think I it wasn't until like now that I've even thought about hiring someone else.
Yeah.
So I've done everything myself. I never hired a business coach. And believe me, there's a lot of good and bad and just bots that hit you up on Instagram, ask to do a newsletter, ask to do a VA. Like I never did any of that, because it's, you know, it's kind of like my baby. I grew it from the ground up. I'm still not a big influencer that just decided to do online coaching, just make, you know, extra bread on the side. I started this from scratch as a business owner and have continuously built and learned my way, took calculated risks, and, you know, it's been paying off pretty well, I'd say.
Yeah. I'd say so too. So I think it's interesting how you market yourself as not an influencer, because I think there's definitely like...
Yeah, I try not to.
A very, I don't know what the right word is, like a cloud against that term. Like, oh, you're an influencer. Like, what do you actually do?
Yeah.
So how do you, whenever you pitch someone that wants to work with you and they're like, if you were recommended by someone and they're like, oh, well, he's just an influencer, how is he going to help me? How do you rephrase that to someone?
So I'll start with the way that I run my page. And I think the way that I run my page, one, is going to change in the future. I'll give you kind of insight on that, later on. But basically the way that I wanted to run my page is because I do lifestyle coaching for corporate Americans. Okay. People who work 8-to-6, 9-to-5, your traditional, someone who works your day job that cannot seem to manage to change their physique, either from lack of knowledge, from lack of, time commitment, structure, etc. And what you see is, and honestly, you see it more often than your quote unquote freshman 15. You see that post-grad 20. People just let themselves go. Those are the people that I help. Okay. So the way that I run my page, it kind of ebbs and flows, but I want you to come to M Wade Fit and not just see shirtless pictures or, thirst traps and, okay, this guy's full of himself. Like, yeah, he has a great physique. And yeah, there's a piece of it. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, there are people that come to my page and they immediately say, wow, I want to look like him. I want to work with him. Cool. That's some of the market share. Okay. But the way that I run my page is I like to showcase my client testimonials, their journeys, the context behind their journeys, not just, okay, this person lost 20 pounds, but this person lost 20 pounds. She went on vacation. She got sick a few times. She battled COVID. She's had an eating disorder, and we had to fix her entire relationship with food. And it took us 10 months to even get to the point where she could even lose weight healthy and sustainably in the first place. Like, people want that context because people want to, relate to you. Relatability is huge when it comes to, building a business. Okay. When it comes to, running an influencer page, the way that I run my page is not going to get that many eyeballs. That's why if you go to my page, you don't really see thousands of likes. You see 75, 50, 300, it comes and goes because, it's not the content that gets the eyeballs, but it's the content that people relate to and want to spend their money on, and you can monetize their platform. So my following isn't that big, but the way that I run it, I monetize it really well, and therefore I'm able to do online coaching and compete with people who have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of followers and have a bigger online coaching business than them and be more successful in the industry. We are going to be rebranding M Wade Fit to MW Fitness Coaching. Okay. So that's going to be my coaching page, where it's the main topic and it's basically making the umbrella for when I do hire other coaches underneath me and when we start to branch out. So that style of content is going to be about education. It's going to be about client testimonials and journeys, you know, workouts and nutrition protocols and best practices for busy corporate professionals. That's what that whole page is going to be about. Okay.
Yeah.
And eventually when I have like other coaches sharing their success stories and their client testimonials. Now I made a personal account because, you know, I am in like just personally, just to give you a little bit more about myself. Obviously I've kind of fallen in love with, you know, bodybuilding and the whole competition aspect. I used to be an athlete in high school and just having that that competitive edge a little bit more now. Never had that after high school, having something to train for. I feel like my potential to do well in the sport is there. So I'm basically creating a new Instagram page, which I will call MWade Fit. I'm basically going to transfer that name over once we do the rebranding on the MWade Fit current page. Because MWade Fit is kind of like my personal brand.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's going to be where, you know, I post like my posing, my training. The training will have a little bit of overlap because I do think there's good perks for both.
Yeah.
You know, more about my personal life, my influencer style of content, because I am into photography too. Like just something that I've always liked. And you know, your thirst traps and all that good stuff is going to be on that page. So basically you kind of have a decision, like you can follow my business page eventually, and then you could follow me personally. So, that's kind of where we're going. So I'm very much looking forward to that because I am into photography too, like just something that I've always liked. And you know, your thirst traps and all that good stuff is going to be on that page. So basically you kind of have a decision, like you can follow my business page eventually, and then you could follow me personally. So, that's kind of where we're going. So I'm very much looking forward to that because MWade Fit currently, if you kind of look through the context, you're just going to see a mix of just all different niches of content. And I want to niche it down a little bit more and then take the content that I still do like to make, but put it on a separate page.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that you're a very independent person. Mm-hmm. So what ultimately led you, I feel that, what ultimately led you to even really think about venturing into this separate coaching platform and having coaches or thinking about even hiring coaches underneath you?
Well, when you think about, you know, doing coaching and doing it for a long, long time and creating, you know, not only passive income, but, you know, generational wealth type income, like you can't do it alone. Okay. I can't coach personally. I can't coach more than 100 people at one time. I've done it in the past and it's like my quality of life is terrible. And then my training goes to, you know, in the gutter, my mental health. And obviously I can only be good as a coach as my mental health is. Okay. Like I want you guys to look at me as kind of like your champion, your of fitness, like the person that you look up to. And I need to, you know, showcase myself in that regard. And if I'm not able to, you guys will be able to feel that energy.
Yeah.
Like when I was in prep, like I made it very known to you guys, hey guys, like I feel like dog shit. Like, please bear with me. Like I'm doing the best job that I can. And then when I was back and you can almost tell the energy in my voice, like I'm back to being a normal person, like able to go above and beyond. So, just realizing that, you know, we can help more people and I can't do it alone. And like a couple things that are off the top of my head, like the first thing that I want to hire is a female coach. A female coach who maybe specializes a little bit more in hormonal health, just because that's something that, you know, I have some decent knowledge on, but could always improve on and always want to improve on. And also it gets a more relatable market share for, you know, because girls don't come in and look at my page and say, I want to look like him. Sure, they might find me attractive. They, who knows, but they, I don't relate to them like I relate to the guys. And I believe it or not, I actually have, in the recent months, I've have more females joining almost than guys, which is like pretty cool because I think I do a good job showing that, you know, and showing you too, like that there is a lot of issues with diet culture, especially with females. And the females are really afraid of the scale, and the scale does not paint the full picture.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest with you, I do a 4-month minimum commitment, and because we're on the podcast and, you know, we can be transparent, like, generally 9 out of 10 times, like, the females that come in that want to lose weight, they're not even able to lose weight until like month 5 or month 6. And it's like, it's a very difficult conversation to have because they come in drastically under eating for such a prolonged period of time. It's not a 4-month turnaround for me to just self-correct their internal health, and their body's like, okay, we're ready to lose weight. Like, sometimes if they've been under eating for 3 to 5 years, like, this isn't a 4-month turnaround. And of course these females, like, they want to lose weight, and yeah, they're like, okay, I understand I might not see it for a month or two, but month 3, month 4 comes around, the scale is still the same, or it's even higher because we're trying to push food up, and that's how their body's reacting. Like, that's when they get frustrated, and that's where it's like, sometimes there's turnover and they're like, well, this isn't working because my weight isn't going down. And it's that constant reminder that we aren't able to lose weight because of what you came into coaching. Okay. So obviously, in order to lose weight, you can, you know, move your body more, or you can eat less food. Okay. If you're already eating a very, very low limited amount of food to the point where your body and your metabolism is now adjusted down to just make do with what you're giving it because your body wants to survive. So eventually, if you keep under eating, your body's going to be like, all right, we have to make do. Like, and that's where you kind of live suboptimally, and you don't have that extra energy. And chances are these people aren't really that active because they don't have the extra energy because they're under eating to go move their body. So now it's like, okay, we have to start chipping away at bringing the food up so that finally the body, you know, at a slow rate, so the body doesn't gain weight really quickly, but enough so that it stays, you know, around the same body weight, stays put, and now you have extra energy and you can start moving your body more and you can get stronger in the gym. We get from, you know, 1 workout per week to 3 to 4. And finally, once you get that up and running, the, you know, energy also happens when you exercise. So it kind of comes full circle. We can continue pushing the food higher until the point where we get to where they're back to living optimally and they get that taste of, wow, I feel amazing. I'm strong in the gym. I'm eating double the amount of food that I was when I came into coaching, and I'm still the same weight. You haven't put on any fat. You've just enhanced your metabolic rate. You've put on some lean quality muscle. You look better. That's why half the girls that come in, that their scale doesn't weight, their body recomp is much, much better. But again, going back to, you know, patience and trust, and if these people don't know you personally, and, you know, it can be a very difficult conversation to have when you have to tell a female, look, based on what I'm seeing with your body, you're not even in a position to lose weight for 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, sorry. Like, summer's coming and you're not going to lose 20 pounds because I'm not going to make my clients more unhealthy when they come into coaching, when they leave. Okay. Because if you're already under eating, the only thing that I can make you do to lose weight is to cut your calories even lower, which it's going to get wildly unsustainable. And if you're already eating like 1200 calories, you have to eat 800. You're eating like you're not going to hit your protein goal on 800 calories, no shot. Right. And you're going to eat like lettuce. Like, and then you're going to definitely binge on the weekends because you're absolutely starving yourself and you're going to have no energy to work out. So that's the other card. Can I get you to move or exercise in 1200 calories per day? Probably not. You're shot at the end of a work day. So that's the,
How do you, I mean, I know it's very much more prevalent in females, but also
happens with men too.
Yeah, it is with men too.
It's totally.
You know, you definitely see them, and I always compare it to like the inverted triangle where like their arms are really big and then their legs look like little twigs because they just don't want to work out like at all. But how, like, if someone comes in with kind of that unhealthy mindset, have you ever had someone try and argue with you, I guess, like thinking they know better?
Oh, yeah.
What happens with them as a client? are you able to reframe their mindset, or do they end up just being like,
There's been both. There's been points where they've challenged me every single week, like, why is my weight not dropping? And I've constantly, like, got on the phone with them multiple times. And, you know, you're entitled for your monthly call, and I'll request if I want a new one. But, like, taking the time out of my schedule to call them, like, when they need it, to explain to them this is what's happening and this is how we have to do it. And they didn't want to grasp the reality of the situation, and it got to a certain point where it was like, this isn't, you know, worth my time. Like, I can't, it's not 100% success rate, okay? You need a two-way street, two responsible adults. It's also not 24/7 customer service when it comes to fitness. Like, you'd be surprised. Like, some people, yeah, you pay, like, you know, $250 to $350 a month, whatever, you know, the deal is at the time of the year. And some people think they can chat you at like 1 a.m. and expect a response 5 minutes later. And it's like, look, if you wanted like a 24/7 on call, like, you're going to pay thousands a month. Like, that's like that. Yeah. So yes, it's been, it's generally a good response. I can generally get, like, within the 4 months, I would say like 9 out of 10 people come out of it with a very, very positive experience. Maybe they didn't see the external results that they were looking for, but they are in a much better position internal wise and their structure and the way that they feel, and they look better. Okay. Like, they slightly are tighter shape. They have more energy. They're stronger in the gym. They're able to eat more food at rest. They have gotten value and knowledge out of the 4 months. Now, some people come in and they're ready to go. Like, they already have experience tracking macros, and they're like, let's go. And you can immediately, you know, start a phase. I generally don't start anyone on a lean growing or dieting phase right off the bat as a coach responsibly. I want to be able to see how your body adjusts. And in the grand scheme of things, it takes like 6 to 8 months for someone to really learn how your body, you know, maneuvers and adjusts based on different nutrition metrics, your training performance, the lifestyle that you like to live, all that stuff. But, you know, some people do come in pretty much ready to diet down if their daily nutrition habits and experience are in place. I would probably do at least a couple weeks to a month of a body recomp just to kind of gauge, you know, their optimal macros and nutrition level, and then we'd start a dieting phase. So it's very, very case by case. And the way that you communicate to each of these clients is much differently. Okay. So someone that I just joined the program that I don't know, absolutely butcher them with kindness, motivation. I have a lot of analogies that I somehow come up with on the spot that just like motivate people to just do something rather than nothing, which is the mindset that I want people to take on. But once you kind of get in the program, and it's, if it's consistently like, okay, we've gotten to the point where I know you now and we're not taking that next step, like, you will get hardo, like, more like light a fire under your ass, like, Matt, because it's like, okay, like, you're right there. Now we need to take the next jump. Like, you know what's expected of you, and you're just not executing it. Like, 100%. So it's timeline on the coaching. It's also case by case on the person. Sometimes I may even add that as a question, like, how do you like to be coached? Are you someone who likes the constant, like, motivation and, you know, encouragement, or you need someone to just tell you how it is? And I generally like that type of person more, because I'm a very straight up person. But so I almost forgot your question, so ask another one.
Well, my next one is gonna shift more towards you and your bodybuilding experience. You brought it up before. You said 6 months ago, whatever, you would have been like, oh hell no, if someone was like, oh, are you gonna do bodybuilding? What, you mentioned the competitiveness. Is there something specific that you were like, I kind of want to try this?
I think it all kind of aligned around the fact when I knew I wanted to move out of New York City. New York City made me, you know, the go-getter, the hustle culture, the entrepreneur that I am today, because you have to in order to make it there. And I was, you know, working two jobs and stuff. But eventually when I realized, okay, like if I really want to do fitness and be, you know, a big name in the industry and be really successful, I want to be in a spot that is more welcoming and has more of a bigger community of people that I can connect with, you know, collab with, learn from, that are better than me at what I currently do. I'm a big person at networking and being involved with people that are better than you at what you're trying to do. That's how you learn. Okay. People are super intimidated by that, and they shouldn't be, but generally people, when they see someone who's better than them, they immediately like are a hater. I want to pick their brain. What are you doing? Why are you better than me? Like, what can you teach me? What can I do? And believe it or not, what I've learned from my experience is you'd be surprised on, yeah, they're better than you. Maybe they've been doing it longer. Maybe they got a little lucky. Maybe, you know, combination of both. But you'd be surprised on the things that they learn from you, someone who's maybe not as successful, telling them how you do things, and it's like mutually beneficial. So I would say, going back to your question though, I would say right around the time where I knew I wanted to move to Florida, I hired a coach myself, which is something that I personally and cannot express how important I think this is. Everyone should have a coach or someone when it comes to fitness, just to offer perspective. And just even if you get to the point where you know exactly what you're doing, you should still think of coaching and as an investment. And like, it's just someone to communicate your fitness journey. It makes it more fun. It makes it more motivating. You know, you get to hear and you get to, you know, have a two-way street. So I hired a coach, and my coach is a bodybuilding prep coach. Okay. Because I just wanted someone to take over my training and my nutrition. I do it for a living. I was doing it for like at that time, like 70 people. And I was like, I can't even think about what my macros should be like, or what my training, like changing that up, like someone else do it. Like, look at my body and tell me, you know, what I need to do in order to keep, you know, improving it. And so hired him. He actually went to Syracuse too. And slowly but surely, he kind of just chipped away at, like, not saying he gassed me up, but he's like, dude, like, you have the physique, like, you could really do well here, like, why don't you just give it a shot? Like, it's like a bucket list thing. And I was like, you know what, like, that's how I'm gonna treat it. I thought, like, going into it, I thought, I was like, okay, this prep would be not only cool for me personally to have something to train for, it's gonna teach me a lot about myself and about more about weight loss and, you know, the extreme radical levels of it, because I want to say bodybuilding and a traditional sustainable weight loss is entirely different. Okay. Like, which is what I communicated very clearly to you guys. Like, what I was doing is not what you need to do in order to lose weight or achieve a lifestyle physique. Okay. Like, I did several, probably like 20, not 20, but like 7 to 8 weight loss phases, like lifestyle, and I was in ridiculously good shape, like very lean, summer ready. Bodybuilding is a different level of leanness. It's like you get to the point where your body does not want to get any leaner, and you have to manipulate certain things and push it past. And because you do that, it really starts to like hurt you mentally, and you know, physically, you just feel horrible. Like, I've never felt worse in my life than when I did the prep for bodybuilding. Mentally, you get delusional, like, straight up. Like, I remember I was lifting with a buddy, and we were doing, like, bicep curls. And, like, this was, like, I was, like, 4 to 3 weeks out from my competition. That's generally when you really get to that digging point. You're so close. You're, like, less than a month out. And it's, like, you just put all this work in. You're not going to quit now. Like, and... to be honest with you, my coach said something that stuck with me. He said more than half of people that attempt a bodybuilding show for the first time never make it to stage. So you are right. Most people do fold at that point.
Yeah.
It takes a special type of person to make it through a first prep and do it the right way where you're competitive.
yeah, you can get on the stage and be like, you know, kind of fluffy and not perform, but like it's different from running a marathon, like where you can go and run a marathon and walk a mile and then average your paces like 12 minutes, or you can really train for it and try and run it at a 7 to 8 minute, you know, pace.
Yes.
Bodybuilding is a little bit different because there's, you're not hidden in the numbers. If you like, you're on stage and you have like your own individual routine, and then you get brought out, and if you're not doing well, it's pretty obvious. You right. get pushed to the side. You're not center stage. Right. So it's a little bit more like putting yourself out there in a way. So you, if you're gonna, I would almost rather not do a show than go and then do a show and not look at my best. So
yeah.
Which happens too. Like some people pull out of shows and then just like, you know, delay it and push back to another show a couple weeks later. If for whatever reason, digestion gets screwed up, because once it gets to the like last 2 weeks where it's like depletion and then peak week, it's, you manipulate everything that goes in your body, your water, your sodium, like by the meal, like the coming days in the show, we would take a, we would eat. And then I'd have to immediately, he was in person, luckily, he would pose me and look at my body and then develop like my next meal on the spot.
Oh my God.
And then we would do that like 5 times per day. Like, so yeah, like, okay. By like the, when I did my second show in Houston, like it's kind of boring at like when it gets to the last like 2 days, like you're not lifting anymore. You're done training. You're done doing cardio. You're just slowly trying to add carbs and fill out. And kind of once you get to that peak look, hold it like, and not spill over or not get flat and go under. So it's like that holding look. You sit around and do nothing. Like I had the equivalent of like one water bottle for the entire day in the 105 degree weather in Houston. So I didn't go outside at all. Like I was like, if I go outside, I'm screwed. Like,
right.
So, but again, going back to your question, that's where I decided that I wanted to do it. It was definitely a bucket list thing for me. I thought it would teach me more about being a better fitness coach. And I thought it would be really motivating and be a cool story for my clients, even though I don't coach bodybuilding. It's always cool to see, you know, someone who you look up to and is coaching you like walk the walk,
right.
to an extreme level rather than just talk the talk, you feel?
Right.
So
yeah, absolutely.
That's, and I thought it would be, you know, good exposure, and just, it was fun. It was a good time. Like, yeah. And luckily ended up winning both shows, which is pretty unheard of for a debut, which is pretty cool. So it was successful. Now, if you ask me what my plans are in terms of competing in the future, I definitely think I'm definitely going to compete again, not for a while. Okay. I do want to see if I can go get a pro card. And then after that, I may never compete again. Or I may, I haven't thought about it that far, but I know I want to get a pro card just because it's another credential to add to the resume. And I kind of like to think about it like there's really no like doctorate in physique building. You can get a doctorate in exercise science, doctorate in nutrition. If you have 100K on Instagram, it's like, these are like, in today's day and age, whether you want to like it or not, I personally don't really like it, because just because someone has 100K on Instagram doesn't mean they know everything, but it does add credibility. We can't like say that it doesn't. Someone has over 100K, you're like, okay, wow, this person must know what they're talking about. Like having IFBB Pro is kind of the, if you will, an equivalent to like doctorate in physique building. Like, okay, this person clearly knows. Like, yeah, he's done it to a high level. So that's kind of why I want to do it. Plus, like, it's just kind of a personal goal at this point. Like,
yeah.
But that would be like a year. I don't think it'll take me 2 years, but a year and a half probably.
I have two bodybuilding questions.
Sure.
One is a serious question.
Okay.
One is a not serious question.
Okay.
Which one do you want first?
Let's do the serious one.
Okay. So this podcast kind of focuses on mental health.
Yeah.
And I know like you were super transparent about it as you were going through with all of your clients. And you said your mental health kind of took a little bit of a dive as you were
totally
going through all these changes. Can you tell me like what that was like and how you were able to pull yourself out of it or get more of a control over it.
Sure. Here's what I'll say with bodybuilding. Bodybuilding for me is unlike any sport that I've ever done because there's a difference between like you being bought in and like, you know, motivated and you're like, I'm all in 110%. Like bodybuilding consumes you.
Yeah.
Like when you get to the point where you don't want to go to train, you don't want to do anything but eat food because like, you develop some sort of like premature eating disorder qualities when you're doing a bodybuilding prep, in my opinion, if you're doing it really right. Like you have to be kind of crazy in order to do it because you're dieting for so long, which is different from a sustainable weight loss phase. And you can't really do high volume foods or intermittent fasting. Every meal is like perfectly spaced out. So a digestion is perfect. You're eating the same foods. You live like a dog. You live under a rock. So over time, when you do nothing but go to the gym, do cardio and come home and do nothing on Friday and Saturday nights, you feel really lonely. And I also moved to a new state during it, which is not ideal. And looking back, I probably shouldn't have done that. I didn't know many people. Okay, so it's not like you move to the state. What do you want to do? You want to go see the scene. You want to go meet people, make friends, you know, go out to bars. I couldn't do any of that. So it was like very lonely for, you know, a decent amount of time. Luckily, the community and the gym that I was able to join in Florida is like in Tampa. It's like the bodybuilding gym. It's like where the pros train and like people who are really serious about it. So that like-minded culture was what got me through it because I was at least an hour or two a day, sometimes even 3 hours when I really needed it. I would just get out of the apartment and I'd go to the gym and I'd stay there as long as I could. One, because it would kind of distract me from not being in my kitchen, wanting to just eat everything in sight, but also like just communicating and talking to people that have been there and done it to the highest level. And like, you know, gave me free game and advice, like, okay, this is my first prep, this is what I wish I knew, you know, and it was like, that is what I think ultimately got me to do it. If I was in New York City the entire time during prep, I wouldn't have made it to stage. I do think there's pros and cons. Like the fact that I'm my own business owner and I control my schedule was definitely very, very helpful in prep. And I couldn't imagine being a 9-to-5 and doing a prep and like, you know, fire drills come up and you have to somehow make it work. But I also think that it was pretty toxic too, because I eat, lived, breathe fitness. So like every single day it was like my meals, my training, my cardio, and then all of my clients' meals, training, cardio. Like there was no break when it came to fitness.
Right.
So like trying to be super present and stuff was sometimes very difficult when like, you know, it's 4th of July and I'm in prep and all my clients are like, you know, to hell with plan, I'm going to drink. And it's like, I'm locking in, like, I found myself almost getting a little bit more angry with them and then realizing, okay, wait, they are not doing bodybuilding like me. Like, they're a lifestyle client. They should enjoy 4th of July. That's a holiday you don't give up for fitness. That's a holiday you enjoy yourself and show off your results from fitness and then get back to plan. So, like, it was definitely toxic, like, for sure.
Yeah. Part B of the question before we get to Nasir's question. What would you tell yourself now after you've gone through your first prep that you wish you knew?
I would say, which is what I'm actually going to get a tattoo on in September. My message that I came up with prep is extraordinary people live in discomfort. Because bodybuilding is all about living and managing through discomfort. Your sleep is shit. You're starving. Your training starts to not be fun anymore. And generally, I mean, I would say 99.9% of people, anyone who does a bodybuilding show does it because it stems from their love of training. They love going to the gym because it makes them feel good mentally. And they've done it for a long enough time where they want to, you know, now go show it off and train for something. Okay.
Yeah.
So eventually it gets to the point where, you know, it kind of switches where when I do check-ins and stuff, like, I know, okay, oh, I'm going to go train at 1 p.m. Like, I'm looking forward to that. Where right. when I was doing a prep, it was like 1 p.m. couldn't, like, can we not have a training session today? Like, I don't want to, my legs feel like concrete. I don't want to go train at all. Like, yeah. so not having that, like, thing to look forward to and your mental escape was probably the biggest challenge for me. So the message of just, you know, living and battling through discomfort is what I now know bodybuilding prep is. And I personally loved being on stage. Like, I've always been a good yeah. public speaker, someone who likes to just, like, I can just talk to a wall pretty much. So I just liked being on stage. It wasn't like, I wasn't nervous at all. Like, once I got there, I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. So, yeah. and I think that actually is one of the reasons why I did as well as I did. I did men's physique. So something, if you don't know, men's physique is a division of bodybuilding that you wear board shorts. Okay. You don't show your legs. It's more of a, for lack of a better word, it's more of the pretty boy version of bodybuilding. Okay. Yeah. It's the beach body, the aesthetic attainable physique, if you will. And it's all about, you know, confidence and charisma and having like a small tight waist and broad wide shoulders and a big wide back. That's what, yeah. and like a good core, like that's what they judge. And so, like, because I think I went out there and I was like high energy and good charisma and just good energy, the judges felt that. And it was like, yeah. you know, I wanted to be on stage. I wanted to be there. And that's yeah. what it's all about, like putting on a show. So
yeah.
As opposed to as you progress through the different divisions, like then there's classic physique and then there's open bodybuilding. Open bodybuilding is like when you think of bodybuilding, your mass monsters, like those yeah. guys, like they're yeah. going for like sheer size, mass, muscularity, like they're the monsters of the sport. Yeah, where yeah. there's different divisions because there's all different body types. Right. So, right. yeah, like my body type, I could never get to being an open bodybuilder. Like, there'd be no shot. Like, unless I wanted yeah. to do a lot of drugs and give my entire life to it, I probably yeah. still couldn't get there because it does come down to genetics too.
Yeah.
Because when you get to the pro level and everyone's, you know, this is a topic we don't need to go over really, but when you get to the topic of, you know, steroids and stuff like that, everyone's doing it. So yeah. it's like even across the board at the pro level, like I'm obviously an amateur level. So, but at the pro level, yeah. everyone's doing it across the board. So it doesn't really matter about the drugs as much as it matters about the training, the diet, and more importantly, just the sheer genetics.
Yeah.
Okay. Like some people, you can't change the way the muscle sits on your body. You can change the density. You can change, you know, the maturity, the size, but the way it's inserted on your body, that's why everyone's body and chests and shoulders and arms look different, have different shapes. It's just genetics. So yeah. some people have superior genetics when it comes to visual aesthetics and mass, and you can't outperform that sometimes.
My not serious question, this actually might come across as a very, very stupid question because I don't know anything about bodybuilding. Why the like spray tan look and sure. the not tan like
sure.
fake? I always think it's a little bit funny to like
look. Oh yeah, to. You saw I was dark as hell when I'm like,
you were so dark and then your face was like how it is now. Why?
Yeah, well, they don't really, I mean, my face is still pretty dark, but they
compared to the rest
compare
of the
yeah yeah well like, that's so basically what happens is they tan you up because the lights on the stage are very, very bright, okay? And so as a pasty white guy, like I made sure that I got like four coats of tan, like where someone who's like black or African-American, they might not get tan at all. They just might get a light glaze or something because
right.
they're already dark enough. They don't need a spray tan. But if you're pale, like the lights shine down really hard, and if you're not dark enough, that could be the difference between winning and losing because you just get washed out with the lights.
Okay.
So
is there like a minimum tan requirement?
No, you don't. I mean, you don't have to get tan at all if you don't want to, but like,
okay.
And some people do it themselves. Like all the bodybuilding venues have like tanning and venues and stuff at the backstage at the place. You do it the day before, you go the morning of, you get a second coat. And then right before stage, it's like before they line you up into like generally how it works backstage is it kind of looks like a makeup room, but it's like a waiting room where there's like mirrors all over and you put your bags down and sit in the coach and like eat and stuff. And then they take you out of that room and they bring you into the tanning room where you get glazed, where they basically, you're already tan because you've done two coats, but they basically spray your abs and contort your body with like just like glaze so that you're really shiny and you pop. And then you go from that room to backstage where sometimes they have weights and bands so you can get like pumped up. And then you get in line, like once you're ready, like really ready, you're getting called to like to go on stage. So that's how it works. Yeah.
Interesting.
So
I never did that.
So like,
I thought it was like some like rule of bodybuilding that everybody had to like get.
I mean, it's not a necessarily a rule. Like some people do their own tan and generally they look like shit. Yeah.
Okay.
So you do the tan that's at the show. And it's expensive too. It's not like a spray tan that's like, oh, here's $60. It's like these spray tans are like $175. Like
they make you pay for, didn't you have to pay to be in?
Oh yeah. Bodybuilding is a very expensive sport. Very expensive sport. You don't factor in the hotels and the travel, you know, the food, the board shorts for females, it's even crazier because they have not only are they getting tan, then they have hair and makeup, and they have a whole room for females where they're doing their hair. Because you look at all the girls on stage and their makeup is crazy. They have jewelry, but they have like everything, like their nails match their suit. Like it's all like you're trying to look the best, most presentable peaked on stage. For 10 minutes, like, and you prep like 16 weeks for it, like, or longer. Like, it's kind of silly when it comes down to it, but yeah.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
I don't think I have any other questions for you. If there's something that I missed that you want to.
No, I think that was a pretty good episode of me ranting, per usual.
Hey, you know what? Better than me talking, so.
I told you I'd be a good podcast. I could just chat, like, but.
Yeah, absolutely.
I try not to do it over the top, but I do enjoy podcasts because I like telling my story. I like, you know, networking, and I think also this grew us closer as a coach and client, too. So I appreciate you having
me. Absolutely. I agree. I'll let you get back to your busy day. It's not Friday. I was gonna say you have check-ins.
No, today's like my like chill day, thank God.
Well, I'll let you get back to your chill day. Thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Of course. I'll talk to you soon, Liv.
See you later.
For today's scoop with Kyla, we are going to throw it back to the Parlay Paw days and preview Monday night football, my Pittsburgh Steelers against the Cleveland Browns. I don't want to talk about Pittsburgh last week because they got shit kicked by the 49ers. Granted, San Francisco does have the best defense in the league and is a Super Bowl contender right off the bat. But there were very, very few bright spots for the Steelers. And that carries over to this week. Cam Hayward is out. Deontay Johnson is also out. So that's going to be a hit on the wide receiver side with Johnson being out. But it will give George Pickens some more targets because he did split targets with Deontay Johnson last week. So Pickens, he had 36 yards last week. His over-under for tonight is right at about 42 yards. So I would definitely take the over for that. Just given with Johnson being out. As for the Browns, they shocked everybody and dominated the Bengals last week. I think that, you know, Monday Night Football at Acrisure Stadium, the Pittsburgh crowd is going to give Watson some hell and really, really let him hear it. He did start in week 18 last season against the Steelers, and Pittsburgh did end up winning that game. But the Browns are 2-point favorites, so 2.5 depending on where you're betting. This isn't my pick. This is going to be Kyla's pick. So here's a scoop with Kyla. She's picking the winner of the Steelers against the Browns. All right, so this is Kyla's pick. We have 2 spoons of peanut butter. The one farthest from me is the Steelers. The one closest to me is the Browns. So whichever one Kyla goes to first is going to be her pick. They have 2 different flavored treats on the spoons. So I'm going to let her release here. Go! The Steelers! It looked like she was going to the Browns first, but she ended up picking the Steelers. So there you have it. The Steelers are going to beat the Browns on Monday Night Football. I will see you all next week for another episode of No Off Season. They will be more consistent now that all the moving hecticness has been settled.